Listen, my son, to your master's precept, and incline the ear of your heart. Receive willingly and carry out effectively your loving father's advice, that by the labor of obedience you may return to God, from whom you had departed by the sloth of disobedience. This is Dr. Jim Tonkowicz, Director of Distance Learning at Wyoming Catholic College, and your host for these After Dinner Scholar podcasts. Those words are from the beginning of St. Benedict's Rule for Monasteries, the topic of our fall all-school seminar here at Wyoming Catholic College. Last Thursday, our entire college gathered for Mass, followed by a Benedictine-style lunch, eating in silence as we listened to reading from St. John Henry Newman's writing about the Benedictines. After lunch, we prayed the mid-afternoon office, had some introductory lectures about the rule, and then we broke up into seminar groups that were led by our seniors to discuss St. Benedict's words. The day ended with an all-school festive dinner. Why all the fuss at a college about a rule written for monasteries? I asked academic dean, Professor Kyle Washit, that question.
Yeah, fair enough. In fact, that's what all of the students, I think in almost every student group when they had their small group seminar, they had that question. Is this something for us? And I think not every college would necessarily say the rule of St. Benedict speaks to them as much as we think it does here at Wyoming Catholic. The point I tried to stress to the students is that following some thoughts from Cardinal Newman, from Professor John Sr., the founding president and the founding dean at Wyoming Catholic College, we see the Benedictine rule as a, well, as what Benedict himself says it is, as a proposal for a school. Now, obviously, when you're dealing with young men and women in their 20s who are not here forever, it's not going to be a complete one-to-one ratio. And yet, what John Sr. points out, and Newman points out, is there's a habit of mind that you want to create by following the rule of Benedict that is going to give rise to the kind of depth of thought and theology that you get in a Thomas Aquinas. And so we want to figure out a way to instill that habit of mind and habit of character in our students.
Well, good rules, like good laws, are written to solve problems. What problems was Benedict trying to solve in writing his rule?
Well, there could be a couple of problems there. So you think Benedict is writing after the fall of Rome in the West. We're dealing with an era where civilization's really breaking down. And he's also trying to deal with the fact that the witness of monasticism, this call of radical witness of the Christian life, as it has been experienced in Egypt, as it was transferred over into Gaul, is really intense. It's for, you know, supermen almost, you get the impression. These people that go days without eating, who are praying, as he says in Egypt, 150 psalms a day. And so you have these sort of two things clashing. On the one hand, a desire to create a civilization that is in accord with Christian living, that is stepping outside from the noise and the craziness that is going on as civilization's crumbling around them and transitioning to this new era. And on the other hand, trying to make that civilization something human, something that you don't have to be a superman to do, but that is, in fact, a real, authentic community that can live this life.
What, from Benedict's point of view, are the characteristics of that good community?
The entire rule, in one way, he says a number of things. We try to organize it. It seems to me one of the key things Benedict stresses is a harmony between the work of prayer and the work of living as a human. And so much of the rule is devoted to talking about how you are to pray, how you are to arrange the prayer, and how you are to eat and sleep and what you are to wear. That he sees both of those things as needing to be harmonized together. And to that end, he says, and the way it's harmonized together is by living in this community and regulating the entire community by a mutual respect, by a devotion to silence, but ultimately by this focus on prayer, spiritual reading, as a way to transform the human experience, to open your eyes to seeing anew what community life means, what eating means, what wearing clothes means, all these things that we sort of take for granted. So I think ultimately, that would be, we'd say the ultimate characteristic is how do we invigorate, even divinize these very homey human activities with this contemplation of the divine realities that are in the Psalms and private prayer.
And what are the characteristics of good monks or good college students and community for that matter? What do they have to put in order to get the good results out?
Yeah, so that I think is one of the striking things is that it's a hard job. And Benedict's clear on that, and I stress that to the students. John Sr., in another writing, had made the comment that the material cause of education, the thing that you build on for any formal study, is poverty. And what he means by poverty is not just a lack of material possessions, though Benedict literally instantiates the idea of poverty, but he means this awareness and experience of your limits and the struggles and challenges that faces, and then the persevering through it. So for both a student and for a monk, you are pursuing the contemplation of something that's going to be hard. It's going to strain you, right? Your body's going to want to sleep more. Your mind's not going to want to be so disciplined and focused, and you're going to need to do that work and be committed to it. At the same time, you need to do that work and be committed to it in a way that is not, I'm just going to grind it out and I'm going to make something, but you need to do it in a kind of receptive spirit, an awareness that the good you're pursuing is greater than you, and you need to have a fundamental attitude of docility and silence to receiving that good. You can get really busy as a monk or as a student, running here, running there, feeling like you have a checklist. Certainly a homework schedule or even the monastery work schedule is going to give that impression. But what Benedict wants to stress is, no, the fundamental thing is to listen. It's the first word of the rule. To listen to the voice of God in creation, in prayer, in study. And in that silence, you'll get the strength to persevere through all the challenges and struggles. And in fact, the challenges and struggles are there in a way to protect the silence, to make sure that you keep that silence in mind, that receptivity to what God wants to tell you.
Well, that brings us to the question of obedience and humility. He says that the first degree of humility is obedience without delay. How do they two of those work together, and what's the result, and how is that applicable today?
Yeah, two things there for what Benedict stresses about obedience. The first thing he wants to remind the monk of is that when you're obedient, you're not obedient to some guy. This is not a power struggle, and there's one guy that ended up on top. Your obedience is always to mean two things. One, a gift to Christ, that your act of obedience is always giving your will readily to someone who represents Christ. And secondly, to deny yourself so that Christ can better transform you. So it's a gift to Christ and a denial to self, but both with the end of being transformed in the love of Christ. Now, when you phrase it in terms of gift and self-denial, you can clearly see the link between obedience and humility, it seems to me. An authentic humility, right? It's not slavish. It is not somehow opposed to human dignity. But instead, you're saying, what Vatican II will say, the human person finds himself in a sincere gift of self. And Benedict, years before Vatican II, is saying this, right? Give yourself away to Christ. And in so doing, you'll really know who you are. You will eliminate these false idols of pride, and you'll respond. And so it's helpful in a monastery that you have someone that's designated as the representative of Christ in that way, the abbot. But Benedict stresses also that attitude of gift, of ready willingness to help, to listen, to submit, could be extended to any other member of the monastery with a certain hierarchy. You wouldn't want to ignore the abbot to listen to some junior monk. But that sense that I'm giving, my will is at the service of others, and that in putting my will at the service of others, I'm giving it to Christ, seems to be the way that is going to make a person a profoundly humble person, that is humble in the sense of knowing who they are in relation to God and what they're for.
Now, talk to us a little bit about rules generally. I mean, it seems to me that, well, from John Henry Newman, St. John Henry Newman, talking about how these were people escaping from the world. And by escaping from the world, that meant making a million decisions constantly about all sorts of things. And if it was bad then, you know, it's infinitely worse today.
Right.
So you have a rule. And you know, this is how we do things. It seems to me it's less of a rule and more of a policy statement. These are our policies. This is how we live together.
Yeah, I think, and in fact, Benedict seems to be very clear at various points in the rule that he doesn't think necessarily this is a guaranteed perfect decree. He's aware that sometimes he's moderating what he thinks might be better given the needs of the community in front of him. At times, he's aware that different communities might need to decide things slightly differently than what he's proposing. But in all cases, the need for the rule is so the community can instantiate this common vision. In, as I mentioned, the Eastern monks at the beginning, when you're Anthony the Great, you don't have a rule that binds anyone else. In some ways, you are led by the Spirit, and you go out into the Egyptian desert, and you are wrestling with demons and not eating and having this incredible rule of prayer. And there's a rule, but it's a rule that's sort of dictated by the inspiration of the Spirit. You're trying to be docile to the whispered inspiration. For most, if you're going to go try to escape from the noise, if you're surrounded by noise, Benedict realizes most of us aren't going to be so immediately docile to the direction of the Spirit that everything we do in our life is perfectly in accord with the way that God would like to lead us to salvation, even if you go out to be a monk. And so there's that one aspect of it, just the training of the individual. But the other aspect of it is that you're going to do that, if you're going to do that living in community, well, clearly it's going to be crazy if each one of you is trying to listen to the direction of the Spirit in your own way. Why are you living together? The whole point for Benedict is we're creating a society, a group of friends that are mutually pursuing the good of love of Christ together, a communion of saints that images the communion of saints of heaven. And to live together, you need a rule. And that helps then create this unity in pursuit and this ability to help each other and this confidence you have to be able to follow this rule without having to be constantly concerned of, did I miss some secret inspiration of the Spirit about what time I should get up from prayer?
Now, how did our students respond to this? And did they make connections between monasteries and colleges and families?
Yeah, I think they rightly asked questions. There are certainly things in Benedict and the rule of Benedict that clearly are directed to monks in this sense. Benedict points out that the monk's life is a life of penance. And in an ideal world, every day for the monk would be Lent. Well, it's pretty clear that you can't live every day like Lent and like the sort of intense, extreme penance in a family or as a person living in the world. There are real occasions for celebration, real occasions for eating and drinking in a less strict way than, say, Benedict proposes. But that being said, I think that the students perceived that the radical call to live in community, in Christian community, for the sake of listening to God, that fundamentally resonates with what it means to be in a family or in a college. And while it's hard always to know to what degree that rule should be emulated, it was also very clear that fundamentally this experience of the world, this learning to see the world transformed by God and harmonizing our daily life with our prayer life, that's just the Christian call. And some kind of disciplined rule, some kind of guiding light for community, some kind of way of instantiating that, I think they all recognized. They strongly debated what exactly that should look like. You know, we had arguments about whether a college should mandate prayer times or whether we should fast more or whether, in fact, you should be careful about how much you laugh, like Benedict tells the monks. And I think those are good discussions, good arguments. But those were all arguments and discussions on the fundamental backdrop that what Benedict's trying to do is what we're trying to do at WCC and what we want to continue to do for the rest of our lives. Harmonize human experience with the call to prayer.
While Saint Benedict wrote his rule for monastic communities, his directives about prayer, scripture, humility, leadership, obedience can inform our marriages, our homes, our workplaces, and our schools to great advantage. We all have a rule, one way or another. It's either explicit or not. This might be an opportunity to read Saint Benedict, think about his rule, and perfect yours. If all this all-school seminar talk is making you a little bit envious of our students, let me encourage you to come to Lander this June 7th to 12th for a week of conversations, lectures, seminars, and friendship at the Wyoming School of Catholic Thought. The 2020 topic will be Beauty is Truth, Science and the Catholic Imagination. Information about the school is available at the college website, wyomingcatholic.edu. For Wyoming Catholic College, this is Dr. Jim Tonkowicz.